Hello, this is Dan Bender, executive producer of the Singles Podcasting Network. Today, I'm excited to present Single Living, a podcast that brings you straight talk on everything that concerns today's singles, including relationships, dating, travel, and financial security. Single Living is hosted by Rich Goss, a well-respected expert in the singles industry. He is the author of 8 books on dating and has lectured on the subject in over 50 colleges and universities. Rich is frequently interviewed by the news media, including Oprah, CNN, Fox News, and the Wall Street Journal, to name just a few. And now, here's the host of Single Living, Rich Goss.
Nearly 10 million American women are single at age 50. And according to AARP magazine, the 50-plus dating game has never been hotter. But with fewer than 2 single men for every 3 single women in the over 50 age group, as well as an ageless difficulty in finding the right match, mature women on the dating scene are having a tough time. My guest today is Catherine Chaddock, co-author of Flings, Frolics, and Forever Afters, A Single Woman's Guide to Romance After 50. Catherine is a writer, professor, 2-time divorcee, and mother of 21-year-old twins. Her articles have appeared in Working Woman, Good Housekeeping, Parents, and the Washington Post Sunday Magazine, among others. She is the author of 4 books on American history. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you.
Why did you and your sister decide to write this book?
Well, after 50, we both had really life-changing experiences, and mine, of course, was to get divorced. Hers was the death of her husband unexpectedly. And we started being single ladies after 50, and that was weird and different. And
that's
as we started talking...
That's pretty tough, isn't it?
It's tough. It's just different.
Yes.
It's very unsettling because it's not what you expect. It's not something you thought about in your mind ever before, and so there's very unsettling quality of what am I doing here? And we started talking about it and talking about that as something that we saw some other women going through, and then we'd see even more other women going through, and we realized, well, demographically, of course, we're seeing the baby boomers turn 50 and
right.
have some of the same states of mind, some that even haven't ever been married. So we thought, you know, there's nothing out there for us in terms of relating to men.
Yes.
And what is out there seemed to also assume that everybody wanted to capture somebody to go down the aisle with again. And neither of us felt that way, and we started checking it out with others. We want to have guys in our life, but we don't necessarily maybe want to get married again. We're more skeptical about that than ever. We know more.
Right.
We've been there, done that, got the t-shirt. So we sort of thought, well, maybe we should do this book. And that's how it evolved. I had written other books, but very scholarly, more in my role as a professor.
Right. So this is a fun book then.
This is the fun book. This is where I get to get out of my role as a professor and into my role as me.
And did you have fun going out and dating and following your own advice?
Well, actually, while we were writing the book, my sister had just found her Mr. Right.
Uh-huh. And how did she find him?
Going out with friends to a little bar and dance kind of place on a Friday night
right.
in Colorado with a cowboys
yes.
around and so forth, and just happened to meet him at in the group, and wow, it clicked. He's 15 years younger than she is.
Oh my lord, 15 years.
Yeah.
Very surprising. Yeah. And of course, that's one of the big suggestions I always give women over 50 is go for the young stuff, because there's a lot more younger guys out there than older guys. As you point out in your book, for every 2 single men in America over age 50, there are 3 single women in that age group. So if women are dating older men, the pickings are pretty slim, aren't they?
They are. I mean, we have to at least categorize, maybe 10 years younger.
Yes.
Few people end up with people 15 years younger, but, in the group from 1 to 10 years younger, I think at the time I was, when I was writing the book, I was actually, one of the people I was dating was 5 years younger than me. And so, you know, we can expand.
Right. So both of you advocate going younger rather than older if you're a single woman over 50.
Well, consider both. Just enlarge the pool in both directions.
Well, a lot of the women I talk to that are over 50 tell me not only are there very few men that are out there in their age bracket that are older than they are or their same age, but that a lot of these guys, this is not politically correct to say, but I'll say it anyway, a lot of these guys are really literally leftovers. They have a lot of negative qualities to them. A lot of these single guys are alcoholics or have a drug problem or have sexual problems, physical problems, problems with the law, problems with their employment. I mean, a lot of these guys over 50 are a mess, which is not to say that there aren't some great guys out there, but they're in smaller numbers. So a lot of women say, I want to go for the bigger pool of guys. I want to go for the younger guys.
Yeah, I think a lot of divorced women would say that the man they had married was a mess too. Maybe nothing changes. We did, you know, of the women we interviewed for the book, and we really tried to interview women who had success stories.
Yes.
The idea of Fling, Frolics, and Forever Afters is to really kind of learn from success. You know, we all can tell downer stories, and believe me, we all do. And the stories of the frogs that never became the princes. But we really tried to talk to successful women.
Right.
And it did seem that, you know, a lot of the success was quickly figuring out the men who just were, as you put it, a mess.
Yes.
And those, usually, of the kinds of things you mentioned, fell into a couple of areas. One was kind of emotionally immature or just emotionally unavailable. For whatever
yes.
reason, it might be that they were a recent widow. You know, and they were going to grow out of that, or it might be that they were a bachelor who had never grown out of that by age 55.
Right.
Another category were men who were financially a mess.
Yes.
Who had somehow gotten into financial disaster, frankly.
Right.
And were actually kind of hoping for a woman who could help stabilize them.
Exactly.
We didn't find quite as many, although certainly some, of the either alcoholic drug kind of people or the ones that had the real health problems. But I think more common was the financial problems, the sort of the emotionally unstable problems.
Well, when I talk to senior citizens, the women who tend to be even over 60 or even older, they say that every man they meet is looking for a nurse and a purse.
A nurse with a purse, yeah.
Right.
And many are. And many of those, like I said, the emotional problem ones are really looking for a psychiatrist with a purse as well as a nurse with a purse. And, you know, that is true. I've certainly myself dated one or two of those. But that's just part of the thing. You know when things aren't well. Right, and you move along.
Well, and a lot of the guys, of course, that are younger tend to be more attractive than the older guys. They have a flatter stomach. They have more hair. They're more athletic. The women tell me they're more fun. A lot of these younger guys really have a lot going for them that often the older guys don't have.
Yes, they have more to bring to the table. And frankly, as far as I can tell, a woman at 50 or 60 is younger than that man at 50 or 60. The health problems start maybe a little earlier with the typical American male. Maybe that's why actuarially they die earlier.
Well, exactly. The average man in America, as you know, dies 5 years earlier than the woman. And so I always recommend to women, if you marry a guy, you want to marry a guy at least 5 years younger, preferably even younger than that.
There you go. I play tennis with a lot of men and a lot of women my age, and the women my age are definitely younger type tennis players.
Yes, right.
They can cover the court better than the men my age. Typically, this is not every single case, of course.
Right.
There are
well, of course. Well, you know, they actually did a study on disparate age relationships in marriage. They did a study in which either the man was 20 years older than his wife or the woman was 20 years older than her husband. So they went both ways, 20 years older, 20 years younger. Interesting, what they found in this study is they found that the divorce rate was about 50%, which, of course, by coincidence, is the divorce rate for the entire country, regardless of age. So
sure.
According to this one study, you have just the same chance of a successful relationship, long-term relationship without divorce, if you marry somebody your own age, or you marry somebody 20 years older than you are, or if you marry somebody 20 years younger than you are. So if that's the case, I always tell the women, why not go for the young, good-looking guys with the hard bodies?
Exactly, exactly. And this is why I think a lot of women lie about their ages, which
yes.
I don't think is a bad thing always, because
yes.
the number scares people, but the reality is not so scary. The reality is she has energy, she has stuff going for her, she's fun, et cetera, et cetera. And then she says, and I'm 60, and it sounds like a downer to a 50-year-old man. But
right. I tell women that every man out there has a number in his brain, and if you're above that number, you're out. And,
mm-hmm.
and that number, of course, is your age. And you're right. Women hit 50 or they hit 60, and then millions of men automatically cross them off the potential list of dateables. There's just a tremendous ageism in this country, particularly towards women. Now, of course, the men
yeah.
get discriminated as they get older in the corporate boardroom, because as the men get older, it's harder for them to get hired, and it's harder for them to move up the corporate ladder. So men get discriminated against as they get older in the business world. But in the relationship world, women are the ones especially who get discriminated against, because most men have that number, that artificial number in their brains, and they automatically exclude any woman who is above that number.
Sure, sure. It is amazing, and I am always surprised, pleasantly surprised at myself. I'm 58, and since my divorce from my husband, and he was a year younger than I was,
yes.
in the last 5-6 years since that divorce, he's the one that's had the 2 hip replacements. He's the one that's had the aches and pains and can't
right.
do certain things like skiing and tennis that he used to do.
Right.
I'm the one that's playing more tennis than ever,
really?
Pumping more iron than ever, you know, kayaking, et cetera,
right.
et cetera. So, you know, and I see women like that a lot. The only thing that prevents some women from that is this kind of inertia they get when they hit that a number that they have in their brain and go, oh, well, I'm 58, you know, I'm going to give up, you know, my skis and give up my tennis racket. I'm going to, you know, just hang out with the grandchildren and knit them little baby blankets or something.
Right.
It's
so tragic. Yeah, it's so tragic, Catherine. You've got all these millions of women that are over 40 or over 50, and a lot of them are in the prime of their lives. They're happy, they're together, they're healthy financially and physically, and they have such a terrific package to offer another man, and yet they don't. They just hang around their buddies who tend to be other women, and you know, maybe they go down to the tennis club, but they really don't meet any men, and their romantic life is over, and they're just 50 years old. I mean, it's just so tragic, and they may live another 30, 40, 50 years.
Oh, seriously. I'm very, you know, definitely, and like I say, we tended to interview the women that had gotten past that.
Yes.
So actually, for the book, we don't emphasize that too much, but we do mention, don't do this, you know, and because you do see, I mean, I actually have some women friends that can't travel now because their cats are sick.
Yes.
And others can't travel because their grandchildren might need them, or they're living with their grandchildren, or whatever, you know.
Yes.
But all those are excuses, really. Women can do way more than they think. And our idea was if they saw what these successful women were doing, and kind of, this book is not always meant to be a roadmap, although it would look like somewhat of a guidebook. It's also meant to be just motivational. You know,
yes.
forget the 8 steps and just sort of take it for what it is as a, I think I could get going, you know, kind of book, instead
sure.
of doing every single step we suggest, which we do for those women that, you know, need to follow a plan or they can't get motivated. We've got the plan in there. But, you know, for other women, it's just enough to dip into the book, read the experiences of other women, and get motivated. And that is a huge need among women over 50.
It's just incredible. They did a study for American Demographics magazine where they asked single men and single women, how often do you date? And they came up with the most incredible statistic that 46% of single women in America never date. I don't mean that 46% are between dates or currently not dating. I mean 46% of single women in America have totally given up, which is what you were talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
They've just decided that they're too old, or all the good ones are taken, or there's nobody out there for me, or, you know, I'm just too heavy, or whatever it is they decide. They have this negative thinking, and they have literally dropped out of the dating pool altogether, 46% of single women. Interestingly enough, what they found about the men was not quite as bad. Only 21% of single men in America have dropped out. So you've got a lot of single women out there that have given up hope of ever finding love and fulfillment. And, you know, frankly, I think that 50 years is just too young of an age to retire to the nursing home.
Sure it is. And some people forget, too, that it's not, maybe you don't walk out your door the first day and go on a date. Maybe you go play mixed doubles tennis. Maybe
yes.
you just do things with a guy who's a friend. Maybe you just ask the guy down the street what kind of fertilizer he uses on his lawn. You know, whatever. Or maybe
yes.
you're walking your dog and he's walking his dog. You know, all of these don't have to be romances to be really fun, fulfilling relationships. I value some of my guy friends. I value my girlfriends. But I very much value many of my guy friends who I would never feel romantic about, but I have
right.
a wonderful time with and can do things with and so-called date without feeling like I'm dating almost.
Yes.
But that's, you know, a lot of women forget that that's an option too. They don't have to worry about this is a date. What does it mean? What do I wear? What do I... There's a lot of good times to be had that are just plain friends getting together.
Right. What would you say, Catherine, are the biggest mistakes that women make concerning relationships after they hit age 50?
I think the biggest mistake they make is lack of confidence. It is that sort of over-analyzing the situation and not having the confidence to just say, hey, it's my situation. I do what comes naturally to me. I am over 50. I ought to get to be me by now. And just let the chips fall where they may and be my natural self and not overstress about what I say, what he says, what I wear, what where we go. And you know, I think there's a lot of lack of confidence in that
right.
overanalyzing situation. What was it he said? Let me call my girlfriend and see if she's ever heard that. And I think people do this whether they're online dating, whether they're face-to-face dating, whether they're thinking about dating, whether they're thinking about the next-door neighbor as a friend. There's an awful lot of over-analyzing male-female relationships. I don't think the men overanalyze.
Definitely not. I don't think a man puts more than 5 minutes into analyzing his romantic relationships. He either
yeah.
has a good time or he doesn't, and that's it.
And then he walks away.
Exactly.
We also overanalyze the relationships that don't happen. We don't wait for the relationships to happen to start overanalyzing. And
right.
I'm guilty of this, too. You know, I'm still analyzing one that went south a year ago.
Right.
So we are all guilty of that, and yet it's a huge trap. If we could, you know, the one thing we have to, you know, try to do more like a man, and there aren't many of those, but the one thing is to be able to say, hey, didn't work out, who knows why, or I maybe didn't wear the right thing that everybody else was wearing, who knows why, and move on, you know, in the little ways and in the big ways.
Letting go of the past, that's the key.
Yeah, yeah, not bringing it up in your mind in these tapes we play over and over. You know, we're still playing tapes from when we were kids. And, you know, but I was always told you shouldn't do such and such. You know, you
right.
shouldn't be aggressive. You shouldn't be too not aggressive. Oh, you can. Some people tell me you can call him. No, maybe I shouldn't call him. Yeah, I mean, by the time you get through that, you're so twisted up in knots, you're not even having fun. Well,
yeah, that's one of the observations I have of single people is that too many of them approach dating as a chore. You know, it's this unpleasant thing they have to do, and how sad, because you don't get paid to go out on a date. So if there's not a payoff in money, the payoff, I think, should be in fun. And most people literally don't have fun dating, at least not that first date.
Exactly. The people that can say to themselves, this is not about a date, this is about having a fun evening.
Yes.
Or a fun afternoon, are much better off. Absolutely. The times that I've been able to do that, the times that the women I talk to have been able to do that and put the date notion out of their mind and just put the fun notion in there, much better off. Much
yeah, I like
off.
That. We need to probably just drop that word date altogether, because most single people I talk to that are over 50, you know, they cringe when they hear that word date. You know, it's kind of like fingernails going down the chalkboard. I mean, it just terrorizes them. And maybe if we can look at it as just simply a fun experience and don't use that dirty word date, people could actually relax and have a good time.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. And it really is unnecessary. It formalizes things that don't need to be formalized. You know, labels are always an interesting thing. And the minute you put a label on something, you know, you label something as a romance, it's really just a friendship, or
yes,
a friendship, it's really a romance, or whatever. And then the minute we start with the labels and
yes,
so forth, we're probably in trouble anyway, and we're already overanalyzing by labeling something.
Overanalyzing and overlabeling. Well, let's
yeah,
move on to what would you say are the most crucial things that are done by women who are successful in male-female relationships?
You know what? The most crucial thing is optimism. Is and that optimism goes to being able to put a smile on your face. It goes to being able to put a spring in your step, but it also goes to being able to bounce back when you think things went wrong and so forth. So, you know, optimism among these women is just crucial, because the opposite of that is like, oh my gosh, what could go wrong? Oh my gosh, he's a tennis teammate's brother. I bet he's a dweeb. You know, all this.
Yes.
So, you know, I think that this kind of optimistic attitude about what will happen, not just when you're confronting a man and you know you're confronting a man because you're going to, you know, see him at the class play and he's a single father and you're a single mother, but even when you're doing things with your girlfriends or at work or shopping somewhere or going to a continuing education class or going to your book group, you know, optimism about this is going to be an interesting evening, and even if nobody shows up, I'm going to enjoy the book we're discussing at book club tonight, you know, whatever, is way better and puts you in a better frame of mind to know when things are going well and to bounce back when things aren't going well. It's kind of an attitudinal thing, but, you know, it's absolutely crucial to be optimistic through no matter what you think is could go wrong.
Now, in your book, Catherine, you talk about specific steps and actions, having a plan. Doesn't that take the romance and spontaneity out of dating if you have that plan all written down?
Actually, my ex-husband said that when he saw parts of the book on Amazon.com.
Yes.
He said, whoa, what happened to romance, when
yeah,
he emailed me? But actually, most of our plan of the 8 steps, the guy isn't even in 4 of the 8 steps.
Mm-hmm.
Much of the plan is kind of getting yourself together.
Yes.
Getting your physical you together.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. How do you get your physical you together?
Oh, man. You have to analyze what's best about you and absolutely emphasize it at the same time that you get real about what's not best about you and try to do something to de-emphasize it.
And how do you do that? How do you emphasize that your good points and de-emphasize your bad points?
Well, we like the idea of peer feedback, that you do kind of interact with a friend, a trusted friend, and kind of help each other in this kind of thing. And if one of your bad points is getting down on yourself, you need a friend who's always the one that picks you up. If one of your bad points is that you don't, you dress like you're a 70-year-old grandmother when you're just turned 50,
frumpy,
then you need a friend who goes shopping with you and is willing to tell you, that's frumpy, you know.
Yes.
And so forth. We really like the idea of when you're kind of working on yourself, a friend is better than, many times, better than a psychiatrist. Better than the sales lady trying to sell you that frumpy suit, whatever.
Right.
And so we do like that. And we like to ask people to think about their inner shell and their outer shell at the same time. That you don't just go, well, I've got these wrinkles and I've got this pooch and I've, you know, and try to improve the outside, which is definitely, you know, great to try to improve. But also think about the inner you. How interesting are you really? When's the last time you sat down and read a really good Sunday paper? When's the last time you sat down and read a really good monthly magazine? Something a little bit, you know, more intellectual than you usually read.
Something other than TV Guide.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe this month you should just read it at the New Yorker instead of TV Guide. Just try it one month.
Right.
And see how it goes. You know, in other words, it's not just about getting rid of the wrinkles and getting fit and thin, which is all wonderful stuff too, but it is also about making yourself a more interesting person.
Speaking of, what do you think about things like liposuction and plastic surgery and rhinoplasty? Do you recommend any of that in your book?
We actually didn't particularly recommend it, but we told people to think about it. Do they need a facelift? Do they need this? We certainly don't recommend against it. I'm sure that there definitely are people out there that would benefit from whatever, facelift, brow lift, liposuction. And there are also people out there that are getting too much of it because they have the money and they can.
Right.
Most people would run out of money pretty fast. Procedures are very expensive. But
you have to be a multimillionaire like Michael Jackson to go through 50 procedures.
Yeah. So that's kind of an unusual situation. I think people need to look what they think is their best. And if you've got a drooping eyebrows that are drooping below the brow line and kind of shutting your eyes, and if that's been bugging you now for about 3 years, and every time you look at a picture of yourself, you go, oh, my God, I look like I have the eyes of a 95-year-old, then save up and get a brow lift and get it pulled up.
Yes.
These procedures are not 6 months of recovery anymore. They're pretty usually done. So, if somebody can save the money and do something about something that really bugs them, great.
And what about things that you might have left out of the book? If you could do the book all over again, what other issues might you have addressed?
One of the things we didn't address that I would have liked to, one of them, that I would have liked to address, but I just couldn't get enough a handle on it from the women we were talking to who had very different experiences in this, was the use of Viagra and other enhancements,
yes,
performance enhancers of that type. I couldn't get enough of a, consistent answer to say anything.
Yes.
Many women were, very glad that Viagra was there.
Yes.
Other women, they just didn't like the use of Viagra because it seemed like a guy was almost like doing a fake thing in order to have sex with them. Like, they'd rather have it happen because he adores them so much.
Yes.
So there's still that, that,
right.
And it's at maybe the age of 60 or 70, it's not just happening to this man because he adores you so much. That's really a tough call in the non-married set. I think the older married people, it's a little easier in terms of, I know he adores me, we just need this, performance and to be more satisfied.
Well, on that note, Catherine, let's bring the interview to a close. My guest today has been Catherine Chaddock, who is co-author with her sister of Flings, Frolics, and Forever Afters, A Single Woman's Guide to Romance After 50. Single Living is a production of the Singles Podcasting Network in San Rafael, California. If you have any comments or suggestions about Single Living, feel free to email us at singleliving@singlespodcastingnetwork.com. Thanks for joining us today. Until next time, this is your host, Rich Goss.